Parivrajakacharya, Todarasata, Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada ki. Chaya Om Vishnupat Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya, Todarasata, Shrishimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada ki. Nanta Korti Vaishnava Vrinda ki. Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki. Prinsika Hoshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vatsali Guru Bhakta Vrinda ki. Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Syama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Gopada Dham Ki, Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki, Shri Mayapur Dham Ki, Shri Jagannath Puri Purukshottama Kshetra Dham Ki, Ganga Maya Ki, Yamuna Maya Ki, Bhakti Devi Ki, Shrimati Tulsi Devi Maharani Ki, Harinam Sankirtan Yagya Ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki, Rantarashimad Bhagavatam Ki, Nitai Gur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shishi Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Narayanam namaskritim naram chaiva narotamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam mudiraye om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Te Vasudevaya. It's written in text 8 there. I can't see. Text 8, okay. Yavat priyeta jattaram tavat svatvam hidehinam hadikam yo bhimanyeta saste no dandam arhati. Yavat priyeta jataram tavat svatvam hidehinam hadikam yo bhimanyeta saste no dandan arhati. Yavat priyeta jataram tavat svatam hidehinam adhikam yo bhimanyeta saste no dandanarhati. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 14, Text 8. Read the word by word. Yavat, as much as Brieta may be filled, Jartaram, the stomach, Tavat, that much, Swatvam, proprietorship, he, indeed, Dehinam, of the living entities, Adikam, more than that, Yag, anyone who, Abhimanyeta may accept Saha hi Stenaha a thief Dandam punishment Arhati deserves. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Purport. Translation. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together. But one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. Purport. By God's favor, we sometimes get large quantities of food grains or suddenly receive some contribution or an expected profit in business. In this way, we may get more money than needed. So how should that be spent? There is no need to accumulate money in the bank merely to increase one's bank balance. Such a mentality is described in Bhagavad Gita 16:13 as asuric demoniac. Idam adhya maya lapatam imam prapsye manoratham idam astidam apime bhavishyati punardhanam. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future, more and more. The asura is concerned with how much wealth he has in the bank today and how it will increase tomorrow. But unrestricted accumulation of wealth is not permitted either by the Shastra or, in the modern age, by the government. Actually, if one has more than one requires for his necessities, the extra money should be spent for Krishna. According to the Vedic civilization, it should all be given to the Krishna consciousness movement, as ordered by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 9:27. Yat karoshi yat ashnasi yat juhoshi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi kanteya tat kurusha mat arpanan. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. Grihastas should spend extra money only for the Krishna consciousness movement. The Grihastas should give contributions for constructing temples of the Supreme Lord and for preaching of Srimad Bhagavad Gita or Krishna consciousness all over the world. Srimbam Bhagavato Vikshnam Avatara Katamritam. In the Shastras, the Puranas, and other Vedic literatures, there are so many narrations describing the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everyone should hear them again and again. For example, even if we read the entire Bhagavad Gita every day, all 18 chapters in each reading we shall find a new explanation. That is the nature of transcendental literature. The Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, affords one an opportunity to spend his extra earnings for the benefit of all human society by expanding Krishna consciousness. In India, especially, we see hundreds and thousands of temples that there were constructed by the wealthy men of society who did not want to be called thieves and be punished. This verse is very important. As stated here, one who accumulates more money than needed is a thief, and by the laws of nature he will be punished. One who acquires more money than necessary becomes desirous of enjoying material comfort more and more. Materialists are inventing so many artificial necessities, and those who have money, being allured by such artificial necessities, try to accumulate money to possess more and more. This is the idea of modern economic development. Everyone is engaged in earning money, and the money is kept in the bank, which then offers money to the public. In this cycle of activities, everyone is engaged in getting more and more money, and therefore the ideal goal of human life is being lost. Concisely, it may be said that everyone is a thief and is liable to be punished. Punishment by the laws of nature takes place in the cycle of birth and death. No one dies fully satisfied by the fulfillment of material desire, for that is not possible. Therefore, at the time of one's death, one is very sorry, being unable to fulfill his desires. By the laws of nature, one is then offered another body to fulfill his unsatisfied desires, and upon taking birth again, accepting another material body, one voluntarily accepts the threefold miseries of life. So one may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together, but one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakchuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangulangayate Grim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Guru Dinataranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadi Shatarine Anchakalpa Taruvyascha Kripa Sinduvya Evacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Guru Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, good morning, everyone. So Srila Prabhupada explained that this is a very important verse. Actually, this is a principle of not accumulating more than necessary. It's repeated in the Sri Upanishad and also in Upadeshamrita, the instructions even for the sadhakas. We are advised to don't perform atyahara, or to accumulate more than necessary. And in the Sri Upanishad, it is explained that everything pertains to the Lord, Isavasyan Idan Sarvam, Yat Kincha Jagatam Jagat. So everything, like spiritual, material, is owned by the Lord. And one should accept Tena Tyaktena Punjita, his quota, and shouldn't try to take more than one quota, Makrida Kashasit Tanam, because otherwise life becomes very complicated. Asurya Namate Loka. One will get, like in this purport is explained, that will get punished by the love of nature. And we know that that is a principle, because if we eat more than necessary, we get stomach pain. Actually, the word here, jataram, is translated as the stomach. Brieta, maybe feel, jataram, the stomach. So when the stomach is filled more than necessary, we get punishment immediately. with pain. That is a principle in everything we do. So it's not just only accumulating more money, but that's the symbol of accumulation. But it can be anything that you accumulate more, except devotion for God, that you can accumulate. But anything else that is material will cause problems. So in this purport, Prabhupada explained that, first of all, he said, by God's favor, we may sometimes get large quantities of food grains or suddenly receive some contribution or unexpected profit in business. So the first thing to acknowledge is that whatever is here is grace. That whatever we get, either food, money, or family, or friends, nothing pertains really to us. It's all provided, it's all owned by the Lord, by Ishavasya, the Supreme Lord. And so without that understanding, it's very difficult to deal with the world, because the false conception that this is mine and this is yours and I want to have what you have, it creates conflict. There is no concept of unity. So, for instance, the materialistic mentality that ignores that proprietorship of the Lord is described in Bhagavad Gita. So the Prabhupada explained, no, the demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. So this is a classic mentality. It's the same mentality that a country will have, a group of human beings or an individual. There was the Atlantic newspaper once did a research, published an article about a research on rich people, about the characteristics of rich people. And one of those characteristics was that they may even portray themselves as very religious people. In different ways, some would say, I'm a very religious person, etc. But when they were asked about their fear, it was always to lose their money. And most of them, the average, say that only if they will feel secure only when they have $1 million in the bank, always backing up. If they have less, they will be very, very worried. And at the end of the purport, Prabhupada explained that at the time of one's death, one is very sorry being unable to fulfill his desires. So even if you happen to have all the money of the world, it can fulfill your desires, because material desires cannot be fulfilled. I cannot be satiated. They always will come more and more. Therefore, the devotee is described, the pure devotee, as Ashanta, because he's peaceful, because he doesn't have any kama. It's a kama. He doesn't have any material desire. In the understanding of spirituality, we have always that dichotomy that if I'm spiritual, I should give up all my money. I should give up my wealth. And if I am materialistic, I will always be accumulating money. And so on the one hand, you have the people who are very materialistic and want to accumulate money, and then you have very renounced personalities that they reject everything that was material that come to them, and they engage in either in devotional service or in jnana process and meditation. But for the common people, that's a dichotomy. Like for Arjuna, it was really a dichotomy because Krishna was asking him to work, to be in the world, and being spiritual, and for him was like something completely out of the box, because the concept, even in the Upanishad, is that except for this nice teaching of the Sabhasya, most of the people understand that being spiritual means to reject everything and live in the forest. And therefore, for Arjuna, it was very rare to understand the conception of Buddhi Yoga, which means jnana plus and renunciation in karma activity. So the only concept of renunciation that he had was renunciation, external renunciation. So but the Bhagavad Gita describes also tyaga, which is the internal renunciation there. And that is the renunciation that the scripture recommends, especially for grihastas, is that because they are in the path of accumulating money, because they need the money for their families. So the concept of tyaga means to be detached from the detached from the result, and also the concept of yukta vairagya, to utilize that wealth for the service of the Lord. And that is the advice here, that Srila Prabhupada is giving a hint of how you can still get and work and get money, and at the same time being spiritual, or advance in spiritual knowledge, and don't exceed your quota. And the idea is that whatever exceeds your quota, it should go for Krishna, for Krishna consciousness. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, everything goes for Krishna, because the life of the devotees is dedicated to Krishna. But as a general rule, even if we are not engaging everything for Krishna, we should engage something. That is the main advice. Otherwise, if you have to give up at all the idea of economic development, then it becomes really a very selector cycle, these teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. But we know, because of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and who glorifies Srimad Bhagavatam, and we know that Srimad Bhagavatam plays an important role in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So by observing all the associates of Lord Chaitanya, we can see that there were all kind of associates, and some of them were very rich. They were kings, and they were like Pundarika Vidyanidhi. He had a lot of wealth, and he even dressed very opulent. And then you have personalities like Kalavecha Siddhar, who embraced the renunciation path. Even though he was a grihastha, he was very happy with very little. But you have others, grihastha, who had more. So therefore, when we talk about quota, it's not the same for everyone. But the main principle is that we shouldn't exceed more than our quota. And what is our quota? That is not something that is set. So the quota will vary for each individual. And one should know his quota by practicing a spiritual life, then both by receiving knowledge from the spiritual master, from the scriptures, and by practicing, one will start understanding his own karma, of what you brought in this life, and what is your quota in this life, so you can perform your activities. So we know according also to your talents, etc., you will need more than require or less than other people. Like, for example, George Harrison, he had a big quota. and he wanted to give up that quota and live in the temple. And when he expressed that to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada said, no, you, in a paraphrase, in other words, this is your quota, and your job is to influence people. And you need all this, to the, all your wealth, so you can record music, etc., and influence people in Krishna consciousness. So the idea is that you give Krishna consciousness to others. And so in that way, we have some devotees who, like Ambarish Prabhu, also he's using all his resources to construct the Vedic planetarium, the Vedic temple in Mayapur. And but he never so far gave up everything that he had. He used all his name and wealth for service of Krishna, for his family, you know, for children, etc. So it shouldn't be a dichotomy for the devotees of having the instruction of Srila Prabhupada, etc. Everyone should know that it's not about giving up everything or embracing everything. It's a balance. And that balance, Krishna will give the buddhi yoga, the intelligence, to know the difference. But basically the difference is when we, like Upadashamrita explained, that when we are endeavoring more than necessary for accumulating something that is against the principle of devotional service, finally. So something that will take us out from devotional service, or will put our consciousness aside from thought on Krishna. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. Actually, I wanted to read the appreciation of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Maharaj about Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, because he's a Vaishnava who embraced the path of renunciation 100%. So that in Krishna consciousness, there is place for everything as far as you are Krishna conscious. So we have the admirers of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji were personalities such as Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a grihastha. He had to work and get money like everyone else, but he was fully Krishna conscious. And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, who was very renounced, he was an admirer of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was very different in terms of their position in society than Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he was a very high learned personality who knew many subjects of the Veda, even the Jyotish, the astronomy and astrology. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was an admirer of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, who apparently he was less educated. But he didn't have all the, and he wasn't entitled with all these different fields in education. Yes, this appearance. So it's very interesting that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, being the most learned person, he was taking shelter in Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, who he wasn't trying following a path of becoming the learned, although he was already learned because he knew the essence of all the scriptures. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur will describe how he was perceiving first, and how this great personality, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, was changing inside. He's very introspective, the way that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur expressed himself. So I will read the famous event when He was trying to ask Gorkhisordas Babaji for initiation, and Gorkhisordas Babaji, he said that I only accept one disciple, and he cheat me. So I'm not going to accept any more. I'm not going to make any further disciples. But Sri Siddhanta Sarasvati was not easily discouraged and again begged for mercy. Babaji Maharaj responded, I will ask Mahaprabhu, if he gives permission, your request will be granted. When after a few days, Sri Siddhanta Sarasvati returned and inquired, what was Mahaprabhu's order? Babaji Maharaj replied, I forgot to ask. And when Sri Siddhanta Sarasvati came for the third time, he was directly refused. I asked Babaji Maharaj, so Bhaktisiddhanta asks again, but I did not receive the command of Mahaprabhu, respond Babaji Maharaj. At one point, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he became very devastated. And he stood up and uttered, Karuna Nahaile Kandiya Kandiya Prana Narakibo Ara, which means, without your mercy, weeping and weeping, I will no longer sustain my life. So Sri Siddhanta Sarasvati resolved that however many times he might be refused, no further would he rotate in the world without gaining Babaji Maharaj's grace. Seeing this young aspirant's genuine desire and commitment, Babaji Maharaj relented, and he told Sri Siddhanta Sarasvati to bathe in the nearby Saraswati and then return, after which he accepted him as a disciple. So in 1900, January. So here is the reflection of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. This is a section of in his biography by Bhakti Vikas Swami, which is very true. It's called the regard for Sri Gurudev. So are the appreciation of Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur about Gorkhisordas Babaji. He said, when out of false ego, I was thinking, am I a great scholar of mathematics and philosophy? Let any big pandit come at any time, day or night, and I will cut his propositions to pieces. At that time, I got the darshan of the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev. He ignored everything that was previously appreciated in me, my truthfulness, my moral and pious life, and my intellectualism, knowing them to be of little value. When I saw that, he ignored whatever was good in me. I realized how good he himself must be, who could neglect so many good qualities in me. What inconceivable wealth he possessed. So he could understand that this personality is very wealthy, actually, because he's not attracted to any mundane wealth. So he must have something else. Being neglected by him, I understood that there was no one more fallen and contemptible than myself. That was my actual identity. The very things that I adjudged, desired, such as a scholarship and upright character, this exalted soul regarded as valueless. I apprehended that within himself this noble personality possessed priceless treasure. I then pondered that either he is extremely puffed up or is exceedingly merciful. I then heartily said to my... there are some words that to know the pronunciation. So heartily, because it's a British English. But the idea that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur is saying, to Gurudev, you are a worshipper of that cheater and debauched Krishna. So why could you be compassionate to someone like me, dedicated to ordinary morality? Humbly and sincerely, I pray to the Supreme Lord for his mercy. Later, by his grace, I recognized that without receiving the blessing of this peerless saint and without serving him, nothing good could happen to me. When I accepted that and acted accordingly, and then received the costless, unlimited grace of my Sri Gurudev and refuge at his lotus feet, I deem my life fulfilled. I had considered my Gurudev to be unequally in Vairagya, but somewhat short of learning. This is another section in which Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he said that he was considering him, that he wasn't very learned. And he said, but he reduced to powder my audacity born of book learning. With the mullet of his mercy, he revealed that whatever I had adjudged to be the highest ideal was in fact most low and despicable. When by his grace that instruction first entered my ears, my diminutive brain lacked the capacity to accommodate such transcendental knowledge. But to all fools like me, he gave the chance to hear such lofty topics. I have understood that if the people of this world do not receive the same jolt that I received from my Gurudev, then their consciousness will not awaken. Therefore, I am telling everyone, I am more foolish than anyone else on earth. Please, all of you, do not be foolish like me. Do not live your life within the limitation of calculating consciousness. Discuss Vaikuntha Katha, and you will become a great person. I am telling you what I have realized to be supremely beneficial. So there are many thoughts like that, reflections on the renunciation of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj by Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. But this first, it shows that it's different. A pure devotee, a pure Vaishnava who is renouncing the world to become like a Bhajanandi, for instance, to dedicate their life to chant the holy name without concern by any external things. And they are, of course, different than ordinary people who may embrace poverty, because there are embracing poverty is also acknowledged by our society. When someone's renounced, is admired. Like even Henry David Thoreau, he wanted to live in the forest, and he wrote a book called Walden. And that is about simplicity. He was very admired by doing that, by living such a simple life. But that's different than Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, because some people enjoy, because actually a simple life is more enjoyable than a life of wealth, especially for very intelligent people. They will find some relief and peace and that life. And you can see there in right now there are movements of people, of intellectual people, that they go and live in communities to live a simple life, and they renounce a life of wealth in the city, for instance. But in the case of Vaishnava, it's not about their own enjoyment. It's not, I will renounce so I will be peaceful and I don't want to worry about paying debts, etc. It's not that Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was that kind of person, that he just was trying to have an easy spiritual life in which, I will be chanting and enjoying. But he was just absorbed in Krishna consciousness. He was totally into the pastime of the Lord. He didn't require anything else. And even for his service, because he was a Vaja Anandi, so he didn't require nothing. But he didn't have to preach. His only preaching was his own Krishna consciousness. And he, to show that the difference, like he gave an instruction to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And it's interesting how Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur took that instruction. He said the three instructions that he gave to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur are: one is to not make any disciples. So he was instructed to not make any disciples. Yes, to Bhaktisiddhanta. Yeah, he told him, don't make any disciples. So what did Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Maharaj? He had many disciples. Then second, he said to not to associate with anyone. So he wasn't alone. Okay. Although he spent 10 years, of course, preparing himself. But he was traveling and meeting kings and many people, like rich people even. And third, he said not to go to the world of Maya, Calcutta. So from an external point of view, it seemed that he didn't follow those instructions. So from an ordinary person may have followed those instructions like literally, like not make any disciples, etc. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he knew the inner meaning. So what he did is he said that he did not make disciples. He said, but my disciples were in fact my gurus. He took his disciples as gurus because by observing their ideal inclination for Hari Seva, his own tendency to serve increased. So in that way, he didn't make disciples. He made gurus. And then he did not associate with anyone. Association means to accept something from others, but he accepted only what was given by his guru Maharaj. So he understood that everything was given by guru, by Krishna. Everything is owned by Krishna. And finally, he never went to Calcutta, but only to the Gaudiya Math. Because he made a Gaudiya Math in Calcutta. So and he said, this is by Kunta. So without it was out of the influence of Kali. And so the life of the disciple was externally very different to the guru. But both of them, we have to understand that both of them were 100% renounced and surrendered to Krishna. But they manifested that renunciation in different ways. Because renunciation for the Vaishnava is not like I say, like the example of Turo that I gave. It's not about I give up everything, then I'm renounced. If I don't give up, I am not renounced. It's about being fully Krishna conscious and fully engaged in the resources of Krishna in their service. So, I think time is flying. So we have 13 minutes. So to close. So the verse, Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining the same principle that Sri Upanishad, that if we accumulate more than necessary, or we accumulate much money than we require, we are considered thieves, and we are the mood of nature and material nature will show us that we are doing wrong. Finally, it's a punishment. And then we have an example of devotees like of all kinds. But devotees who embrace the path of renunciation, like we explained Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, but also we have devotees who didn't embrace that path externally, we have a Pundarika Vidyanidhi of Ambarish Maharaj, etc. But they were fully Krishna conscious. And then we have this Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who is a sannyas, and he is not manifesting the same renunciation that a stereotype sannyas should have. Like, for example, this dress. This is a sannyasi, like totally a revolution for the time. No? A sannyasi dressing as a Western, basically. And very aristocratic. But he was fully renounced in the service, engaging everything for the preaching, for Krishna. So maybe you want to comment something? There isn't many things to say.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for your class. You made a lot of nice, excellent points, especially about the example I really liked you gave about over-accumulating in general, but the example you gave was overeating. That's a very vivid analogy. Overeating.
Yes.
Overeating. So it's obvious if we overeat, there's going to be pain. And then we could see if we over-accumulate. Like, I'm not sure if you heard of like storage, where people store their, when there's too much stuff in their house.
they use the storage.
Yeah, people have to buy storage. And so this is obvious. It's obvious that when we overeat, there's suffering, or when we have too much stuff in our house, or we need a storage, it's obvious, you know, this is not gonna give me any peace of mind. But I was just meditating on this point recently, but from our perspective as practicing spiritualists, one thing we may not recognize, the things that we overaccumulate is thoughts, like Maya.
Thoughts.
would you like to store this vengeance thought in your mind? Oh yes, like idiots will say yes, or fault finding. So much things we like to store, and Krishna's looking at us like, would you like to store, you know, Christian consciousness in your mind? We're like, no thank you, I don't want that garbage. We may not say it in words. So my question is related to that verse in Bhagavad Gita 2:70. It says, "Apurya mana machala pratishta samudrama par parvishanti yavat tavat kamayam parvishanti sarve sa shanti mam noti na kamakami." It says that actually the thoughts that Maya is storing in our minds are like rivers going into the ocean. So she's constantly storing things, and it's like no dimensions to it, like a storage. There's limited dimensions, but with our mind, you know, there's unlimited things we can store in our mind. And so this verse basically says that if we try to fulfill our desires, then there's no peace. So my question is related to this point, because we could see that, for example, that when we do try to fulfill our desires, the exact translation says, a person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled, but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not he who tries to satisfy such desires. I know that's not, most people probably didn't get it, but it's in 270 Gita if anyone wants to look it up. But basically it says that if we try to satisfy these desires, we won't have peace. But from a logical perspective, it seems like when we do satisfy, let's say, vengeance, there's some peace. Or when we are try to be the most distinguished Vaishnava, somehow or other one day, you know, we're being more recognized. And then, of course, the next day, if somebody else is being recognized, we're not satisfied. So there seems to be a contradiction in this, is that it seems that when you don't try to fulfill desire or vengeance, there's no peace. You're anxious, like, I can't be peace. But this verse says if you do try to, so we could see that if we do, yes, it's peace now, but then there's going to be some.
Yeah, there will vengeance. Be temporary peace.
So how does one get to the point of not just cringing one's teeth, you know, not trying to fulfill the desire of whatever, vengeance or being the distinguished Vaishnava or whatever, so many things. You know, yes, I'm, you know, cringing my teeth, you know, but I'm still not having peace. This verse says I'll have peace, but I'm not having peace by not fulfilling it. So can you assimilate that dilemma, those, it seems like, contradictions a little bit? So can you explain that a little bit?
Well, first of all, that verse is describing the citta pragya, the transcendentalist. So it's someone who is already in the transcendental platform. It's a devotee with a buddhi yoga, with jnana. Or can be also a jnani, no? Someone who have give up also all material desires. So therefore for that to really work and have a realization, we have to be in that level. So that's why in the application one may try to don't fulfill the desires, and then you don't feel satisfied. You still have anxiety because you're approaching an instruction from a lower level. because you still have the desire. In this case, the verse Apurya Mana na Chala Pratishtam is the desires are coming, but he's not identifying with the desires. The devotee there is just observing the desires. But in the case you are describing, you are identifying with the desire, for example, of prestige, of revenge, which is different than observing the desire. So therefore, the desires are acting on you, on the person, and they are creating that need. It's like the need of it has to be fulfilled somehow. And when it's fulfilled, like revenge or the desire for prestige, then the result is that Jayate Vishayam Punsa, Sangat Sanjayate Kama. So for that desire Kama, Kamat Krodo Vishayate, comes more anger if you cannot fulfill that desire immediately. And even if you fulfilled, it will be cause of distress later on. Like in Bhagavad Gita also it's explained, that the yogi, there are ramante yogi no nante, they have pleasure, they are self-satisfied, they don't need to satisfy material desires because they are a source of distress. Prahlad Maharaj, he explained that the distress begins when you try to be happy. The day you try to be happy, that is the day when miseries start coming. When you endeavor for happiness, it will bring more problems. So I think that, for what I understood from your question, I'm not sure if I understood correctly, but what I understand is, I can say that a higher spiritual instruction have to be, in order to act, you have to be in the level, or you have to know how to come up to that standard. Otherwise, you will reject the instruction of the scriptures as ineffective, because there is a context in the instruction. The context is a sage who is already self-realized, which is different. So therefore, when we try to imitate, like eating less or like that, one may become disturbed in another way, because you're imitating an external behavior without having the proper consciousness. Therefore, it will result in actually trying to satisfy the prestige, etc. When we fast, we may be trying to do fasting only to increase prestige, but that's not the idea. The idea is you fast and then you engage in more service, but you are not expecting someone to come and they say, oh, nice, you do fasting. You don't have the need to say and show up in the prasan and just to say, I'm not eating today. No, you go and chant because it's, or you can serve prasadam to the devotees, but you don't have any business to do there. Like, you go and chant rounds. Use the time that you are having since you are fasting, for example. And so, for example, Srila Prabhupada, he explained what is the difference between trying to fulfill desires and being spiritual. There was one devotee, I think in Mayapur, that was chanting, and Burijan Prabhu told this story in one of the lectures from the second chapter. And this devotee was increasing his chanting, and he went to live a little bit aloof from the devotees, and the devotees were reporting to Srila Prabhupada, well, he's chanting more and more. Prabhupada said, oh, and he didn't say anything. So from time to time, the devotees were reporting that to Srila Prabhupada. So it seemed that this devotee, he didn't want to do any service, but he wanted to become more a devotee, become a pure devotee. So he was chanting. And then they said to Srila Prabhupada, now he wants to, he said he wants to become a better devotee and chant more and more. So now he's going to live more aloof, because sometimes he gets distracted by the devotees, the people who come. So he doesn't want to waste time, and he wants to be more advanced and more advanced. So it seemed that some devotees were admiring him, and then Srila Prabhupada said, as soon as you say, I want, that's Maya. That's Maya. Because the concept is, how can I increase my service? Or how can I please Guru? How can I please Krishna? So that even the desire of renunciation, I want to be more renounced, that's also a concept of Maya. The same, like, I want to be the best devotee, I want. So we can catch up ourselves when we are with that want, and we can understand, okay, oh, it's Maya influencing me. So the parameter to desire in what is to see how we can be more practical and serve in a better way to Krishna and Guru. And whatever for some may take to have a life of prestige, for other will be to be a life in the background. It will differ, but the desire is the same, to serve. So therefore, a devotee cannot be judged by external. Never. Thanks. And Subal Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Gokulananda Prabhuji. I wanted to ask about understanding one's quota. And you explained during the class, and you know, something that I understood is that obviously for different peoples there will be a natural different quota that will be required for, you know, having a life of self-preservation, like in the language of the Bhagavatam. And you know, in my experience, it's not extremely clear how to understand one quota, especially when you don't fully understand yourself either.
Yes.
So, and you receive instructions from the spiritual master, but it's also, sometimes it's not fully clear, obviously, possibly because of one's own filters, no? So if you can comment on that, to understand what's the best way or best practical way to understand one's, you know, prescribed quota.
Yeah, I don't want to say anything like absolute, because we're talking in a relative way, in the sense that it's different from everyone, and there are different levels of understanding. So I can only talk about how I have processed this. And so I'm thinking in some examples of different devotees. The first thing I would say is that our quota is not determined by the opinion of others besides our authority of the spiritual master. Because I have seen the devotees who are very serious, they have proved to be very serious over the years, and sometimes they have been misunderstood because of this concept of they are taking more than their quota, etc. But actually those devotees, they understood the quota, but not others understood that was their own quota. So, talking about the devotees of, for example, Grihastha, who have a life that you can say, oh, it looks like they are on the path of making a lot of money, but actually, and they're working too much, etc. After the years, we can see those devotees very fixed and also doing a lot of service for Krishna, although for some time They look like aloof even for the movement because they were trying to get something solid, for example. And so at different times, because of your understanding of quota, you may have to, it might seem that you go from your quota and it seems that you go off from Krishna consciousness. I'm talking about people, devotees who are chanting the round, etc. When I say going off, it might seem because they cannot be full-time every day in the temple like that. And especially at the beginning when they start, some devotees when they start, we have to live, etc. But then they follow instruction from a spiritual master, etc. And then later on, they are established and they can perform even more service, etc. So that's one example. And even for in our group of Brahmachari, when we long ago, 2001-2, under the care of Gunagrahi Maharaj, we have to accumulate a lot of money to build a temple. So we were thinking all the time in money, in terms of money, practically. But not for us, because we weren't allowed even to have a watch at the beginning. And so we didn't even buy juice, anything in Sankirtan. And we were doing many hours. But I remember we were criticized at that time because they were saying that you are only thinking about money. But the idea, we were thinking about temple and about devotees, so the devotees can have a place. And therefore, and we have a thermometer that marking how much Lakshmi we were getting. But the idea, the books were going out, a lot of books. Because our quota was that. We have a quota of giving certain quantity of Lakshmi, getting, etc. And finally, the temple was built, etc. And after that, some devotees tried to distribute books and get that Lakshmi, but they couldn't. Because there was not that understanding of, and now I'm building a temple. So when they were trying to do for themselves, they have to end up getting a job or something. Because when they were doing with the right consciousness, the money was not affecting their consciousness. But when they were trying to do it for themselves, it was affecting the way you deal with people. So at that time that was the quota, but it's not like always was like that. And then you become, that was the problem, for example, for myself. Then I become accustomed to do books and think sometimes about how much I'm collecting. But then when I realize I'm not collecting more for building a temple, so there is no need to do it in this way. So one might get, there is a risk of getting contaminated and doing more than one quota, so the quota will change according to services. So one point, our quota was to get Lakshmi, and then another point, our quota was just to become, to polish ourselves, not to learn another skills, or learn to do Sankirtan in a more Brahminical way, perhaps. My understanding that the quota, depending on the asana, will change. So the level of endeavor that you will do for achieving something so-called material, it will change according to time and different instructions in life. That one. So therefore, for a grihastha, at one point, they will work a lot, very hard. And like now you are doing now, no? That you are spending more time in the temple, but before, someone may have criticized, "Oh, these devotees are working so hard. Why?" Or another will criticize, "Why he's giving up his job like that?" But one should understand what is his quota. Have some faith in being. If he's approved by the spiritual master, that's fine. And So on the personal level, I think it's very difficult to know the quota of others, but it's not the quota of oneself. At least we can check with our spiritual master or with senior devotees around us. We can just try to check up. And also inside we can understand, oh, this is helping me in my Krishna consciousness, and this is not helping me. But judging the quota of others, I think, is not our quota. Yes, it's not our right. I, at least if we are in a position that we have to, like a leadership, you have to tell a devotee or a brahmachari, you know, you have 108 copies, you know, so I think you should have less. Or you are... So I am speaking because in the brahmachari asana is very different than the grihastha. For example, for devotees, the new training, sometimes devotees they save food for the next day, you know, and they put in the locker somehow, and that in the brahmachari life is not recommended, because, and you have to have faith that tomorrow there will be prasad again. So yeah, not the same prasad. If you have cheesecake, you will have cheesecake maybe after 15 days or 1 month. So just take in the moment, and then, but it helps. But that even may vary according to the devotees. But these are little things that you can, that we can practice. But then when you have to, I don't know, to run a home and a business, that may be more complicated because you are dealing with a lot of money, etc. So I think that you will need more help. In material life, is we also found ourselves accumulating more than our quota, but soon someone will come and will tell us, because we are under supervision always. So sooner or later someone comes and says, I think, Prabhu, you're going off your quota. And then, I think so, Prabhu. But the grihastha, they are living alone, and then, so they have to be really prepared and thoughtful. And also they cannot ask every time to the spiritual master, this is my quota, I guess. So then you have to use your own intelligence, etc. It would make sense. I don't have a really clear answer. So I think now I confuse you more. Good. Yeah. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.